Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 30th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Dunes Sagebrush Lizard. FWS extends deadline for public comment on listing. By Mella McEwen, oil editor. Following requests to extend the deadline for public comment on listing the Dunes Sagebrush Lizard as endangered, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has agreed to do just that. The agency said Tuesday it will extend the public comment period from September 1st to October 2nd, allowing for 90 days of public comment. The Permian Basin Petroleum Association had written the agency requesting an extension of the deadline in order to give the association time to compile its comments. "We have been concerned with this misguided listing attempt for a dozen years now," Ben Shepard, PBPA president, told the Reporter Telegram by email. In a letter to the FWS, the association noted that the service had previously acknowledged the need for comment periods longer than 60 days, pointing out that when the service proposed listing the lizard in 2010, it held two public comment periods. It also criticized the 60-day period, saying the service had initiated the period without advance notice and immediately before the July 4th holiday. In that same letter, the PBPA also requested a public meeting be held in Midland before the close of the public comment period. This meeting, the PBPA told the service, would allow stakeholders, including local governments, the oil and gas industry, the agriculture and ranching communities, renewable energy developers, electrical transmission and distribution providers, and all other local stakeholders to hear firsthand from the service about its proposal to list the lizard, its justification for listing, and the impacts of listing on land uses. The Energy Workforce and Technology Council had also written the service, requesting an extension of the public comment deadline, as well as an extension of the deadline for final determination on a listing, from July 3, 2024 to October 1, 2024. Many energy workforce members operate on public and private lands in New Mexico and Texas that contain DSL and/or its habitat, the council wrote. Energy workforce and its members have a vested interest in the conservation of the DSL and this current listing proposal. The proposed rule stands to have a significant impact on energy workforce's members' business planning and operations by increasing operational costs, delaying project timeframes, and limiting or precluding operations in certain areas. The significant detailed information requested by the service regarding the lizard, as well as the breadth and complexity of the issues raised, also requires the deadline extension, the council added. This article is entitled Big Spring Educator Earns Teacher of the Year Honor by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Jessica Harkins and Michelle Cochran were named the 2024 Elementary and Secondary Texas Association of School Administrators Teachers of the Year for Region 18, according to a press release from the Region 18 Education Service Center. Cochran has been with Big Spring ISD since 2020, the press release states. She taught for 14 years prior to that in Magnolia and College Station. In addition to her 17 years as a science and AP biology teacher, she has held numerous leadership positions in her field, including science department chair, IB coordinator, teacher leadership academy, mentor teacher, and student council sponsor. Cochran was named Teacher of the Year three times previously on different campuses. She was named Teacher of the Year of Big Spring ISD last year as well. From the moment one steps foot into Mrs. Cochran's classroom, they can feel her passion for education, one of Cochran's colleagues said. Jessica Harkins has been with Terrell County ISD for 15 years as a pre-kindergarten and kindergarten teacher, according to the press release. Everything I do in the classroom is centered around the idea and belief that students must be reading when they leave kindergarten, she said. In addition to an emphasis on reading ability, Harkins introduces her students to life skills with the annual Easter Etiquette Luncheon and encourages community engagement with her Mystery Reader program. Harkins also served as the secretary for the Sanderson Youth Baseball League for many years and is currently the elementary UIL coordinator for her district. The 40 Regional Teachers of the Year will be considered for Texas Teacher of the Year in a selection process facilitated by the Texas Association of School Administrators. This article is entitled, Council Agrees on Tax Rate. Approval could mean $100 increase on average home in Midland. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Midland City Council established its tax rate for the 2023-24 fiscal year. City leaders on Tuesday approved a rate that is effectively a 6.68% increase in the tax rate from this fiscal year. Mayor Lori Blong, Scott Dufford, Jack Ladd Jr., John Norman, and Amy Stretcher Burks voted for the tax rate. Robin Poole and Dan Corrales voted against the increase. There wasn't any debate, just a vote, after Burks offered a compromise to what council members had discussed at an earlier meeting. City staff proposed a rate of 35.3162 cents per $100 valuation. Poole and Corrales wanted the no new revenue rate of 32.8693 cents per $100 valuation. The compromise was 35.0662 cents per $100 valuation. The amount would mean making $500,000 in changes to a $168 million budget, which also was approved Tuesday. Tax bill impact. Midlanders are paying $355.04 on their city tax bills for every $100,000 their property is valued at. The proposed rate would have lowered that to $353.16, while the no new revenue rate would have dropped it to $328.69 for every $100,000 in valuations. The approved tax rate for 2023-24 will mean Midlanders pay $350.66 for every $100,000. If valuations don't increase, that would mean a decrease for the average Midlander. However, valuations are expected to increase. The city referenced statistics from Ray Perryman, which showed the average value of a home in Midland jumped from $325,000 in 2022 to $380,000 in 2023. Assuming a 10% increase in an appraisal, the state of Texas caps valuations by 10% for taxing purposes, the city portion of the tax bill on the average home would increase from $1,153.87 to $1,253.61. Budget approved. The Midland City Council unanimously approved a general fund budget increase from $148.55 million to $168.53 million. That increase, according to the City of Midland, included $4.9 million for police and fire at Midland International Airport, which will be reimbursed by the airport fund, $7 million in cost of living adjustments and pay progression, $3 million in new positions and reclasses, $1.6 million for additional facilities and road maintenance, and $3.5 million more for operational expenses. The $20 million increase, according to the city, pays for a $6.5 million increase for police department expenditures, $6 million for fire department expenditures, $2.1 million for community services, $2.1 million for engineering services, $1 million for general services, and $2.3 million for other expenses. Police and fire make up 53%, or $89.7 million, of the City of Midland's general fund budget, the fund supported by sales and property taxes. Property taxes alone are expected to bring in more than $72 million. Items in the budget also include $2.5 million for a new senior center design, $2.5 million for improvements to the Southeast Senior Center, $6.5 million for construction of two additional auxiliary fields at the Scarborough Sports Complex, and $1 million for a golf cart barn at Hogan Park. All expenditures here would be covered by money the city has collected from drilling taking place under non-airport city land. The City of Midland expects to enter 2023-24 with around $50.3 million in the Parks Oil and Gas Fund. The City of Midland reports that it has around $70 million in the city's fund balance, the savings account. Around $11.3 million would be available for staff requests, while $59 million would remain to cover expenses in an emergency situation. This article is entitled "Dry Conditions to Continue in Midland" by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. Expect dry conditions to finish out August and to begin the month of September, according to the National Weather Service. The NWS is reporting no rain in the 7-day forecast, meaning Midland is likely to finish the month with a trace of rain measured at Midland International Airport. The average monthly precipitation for August in Midland is 1.72 inches. Only once has Midland registered 0.00 inches, 1936. The last time the National Weather Service reported measurable rainfall at Midland International was July 1st, 0.33 inches. For the year, Midland had collected 1.79 inches, which is 7.43 inches below normal through August 29th. The NWS in its forecast shows high temperatures expected to rise into the upper 90s this weekend. The average high for this time of year is around 92 degrees. Tuesday's report. Tuesday's high, 94 degrees. Typical high for August 29th, 92 degrees. Tuesday's low, 66 degrees. Typical low for August 29th, 70 degrees. Record high for August 29th, 106 degrees, set in 2011. Last 3 days. Sunday, 95 degrees. Monday, 88 degrees. Tuesday, 94 degrees. Next 3 days. Wednesday, 93 degrees. Thursday, 97 degrees. Friday, 98 degrees. The source of this article, the National Weather Service. This article is entitled "Expanding Footprint in Permian Basin." Since its entry 2 years ago, Continental Resources has grown its operations in the region. By Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. In the fall of 2021, Continental Resources made headlines with the announcement it was acquiring the Delaware Basin assets of Pioneer Natural Resources for $3.25 billion, giving the Bakken and Mid-Continent player entry into the Permian. "We were a little late to the game," acknowledged Harold Hamm, founder and executive chairman of Continental Tuesday. He and senior management were visiting Midland to be honored at a reception hosted by the Midland Wildcat Committee. Hamm noted that the company had tried to make some Permian Basin acquisitions previously, but couldn't finalize any deals. But then, he added, the company had a lot going on in the Bakken, Mid-Continent, and its home state of Oklahoma. But we finally made a deal happen, and we've actually made some additional acquisitions that work nicely, he said. According to Doug Lawler, Continental's chief executive officer, the company now has 200,000 net acres in the Permian Basin, producing 55,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day. It's a strong production base, and he said Continental plans to grow production significantly over the next several years. Approximately $4 to $5 billion in capital expenditures are planned for the Permian Basin over the next 5 years, he said. We are so excited to be in the Permian Basin, Lawler said. We plan to continue to grow our employment. We have over 100 working for us now in the Permian Basin. While the initial deal brought Delaware Basin assets, Continental is stretching out into the Midland Basin, drilling some Barnett Shale wells in Ector County. We see opportunities in other formations, the Barnett and Woodford, said Ham. Chimed in Lawler, there are opportunities in the entire stratigraphic column. Both men said the plan is to draw on Continental's experience and expertise in exploration, a long-held value of the company, and utilize those skills to develop these new formations. Ham said he sees steady progress in infrastructure development in the Delaware Basin, which has lagged the Midland Basin until recent years, and pointed out that much of the assets came with infrastructure in place. He said the company is also focused on environmental initiatives such as treating produced water for reuse, with good results. This article is entitled Midland Resident Wears Mrs. America Crown by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. Midland resident and Odessa High School graduate Regina Stock was crowned Mrs. America 2023 on Saturday in Las Vegas. Stock, 27, was one of 49 contestants vying for the Mrs. America 2023 crown. Shelby Petey of California was named first runner-up, with Brandy DeVries of Minnesota named as second runner-up. On this night, my dreams came true. There are no words to describe the whirlwind of emotions I am feeling right now, Stock said in an Instagram post following her win. I am honored to have been crowned your Mrs. America 2023. I was lucky enough to share the stage with some of the most incredible women I have ever met. I can't wait to follow each of your reigns. The mother of four succeeds Nicole Zwierkan of Illinois, according to pageantcircle.com. Stock won Mrs. Texas America in May and has previously held the Miss Big Bend, Miss Permian Basin, and Miss Ector County titles. She also competed in the Miss Texas USA pageant, according to a previous Reporter Telegram story. Next up, Stock will represent Mrs. America in the Mrs. World pageant. This article is entitled Odessan Dies in Two-Vehicle Collision in Ector County by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. A 63-year-old Odessa man died Monday in a two-vehicle collision in Ector County, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that a 2014 Chevrolet Cruze was traveling eastbound on Loop 338 and failed to yield the right-of-way while turning left onto Farm to Market Road 3503. The Cruze was then struck by a 2022 Ford F-150 that was traveling westbound on Loop 338. Marty Emerson Wampler, a passenger in the Cruze, was transported to Medical Center Hospital in Odessa and pronounced deceased by medical staff, according to DPS. The Cruze's driver and second passenger were transported to MCH and were reported to be in serious and stable condition, respectively. The driver of the F-150 was treated and released from MCH, according to DPS. All passengers were wearing seatbelts. DPS stated the accident happened at 9:46 a.m. and that it was raining at the time. This article is entitled Oktoberfest-Themed Art Crawl Happening Friday by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Online entertainment and social influence site Midland AF will host its fall art crawl from 6 to 9 p.m. at six locations around town. Although the end of the week only marks the beginning of September, the theme for the event will be Oktoberfest. Historical fact: the first Oktoberfest was held in 1810 on October 12th and ran through October 17th. However, as the festival grew, the start day got moved to September and ran through the first Sunday of October. This also allowed for better weather conditions. The art crawl is free and open to the public. Each location sets their own prices for items. 16 artists can be found with art on display throughout the city, ranging in skills such as ceramics, painting, metal making, and more. Feel free to RSVP and let the Midland AF crew know you're coming. MidlandArtCrawl.com/RSVP. Please note that all specials and or complimentary items are only for Art Crawl members. If you go as a non-crawl guest, anticipate full prices. Venezia Restaurant. Expect small plate specials, wine and cocktail specials, live music, and patio seating. Artists: Connie Lee, watercolor and ink drawings; Mary Schwop, acrylic and resin floral paintings; Brandon Norman, acrylic artist; Andrew Lawson, intaglio printmaking. The Blue Door. Expect live music via Dan Fruhoff, Oktoberfest beer on tap, apple strudel cocktails, Black Forest cake shots, dog friendly, and must be 21 and up. Artists: Lauren Estes, painting; Leslie Clay, ceramics; Alex Wolf, collages and oil paintings. Eccentric Brewing Company. Expect 12 craft beers on draft, live music, on-site food truck, and Oktoberfest beer release. Artists: currently not listed. Texas Sun Winery. Expect charcuterie boards, wine flights, food for purchase, live music, and locally produced wines. Artists: Edgar Armendariz, painting and sketching; Elizabeth Natividad, mirrorless camera equestrian photography; Yasika Navarro, handmade accessories and home decor. BAM Entrepreneurial Center Patio. Expect live music, complimentary Oktoberfest food and drinks, family and dog friendly. Artists: Jamie L., eccentric baseball bats; Kathy Keller, watercolor and acrylics. The Fa Fa Gallery. Expect complimentary foods and beverages, the Orphaned Art Show, on-site gallery, gallery cat and family friendly. Artists: Amanda Scruggs, Micron Drawing and Stippling; Jose Hermosillo, painting; Carson Neville, sketching; Jeremy Mitchell, photography. This is the Life Tributes column. Shirley Ann Pendleton, August 21, 1952 to August 25, 2023. Shirley Ann Norris Pendleton went home to be with the Lord on Friday, August 25th. She was born on August 21, 1952 in Levelland, Texas, but was raised in Goldsmith. The Norris family moved to Odessa, where Shirley attended and graduated from Odessa High School in 1970. Shirley married the love of her life, Stephen Pendleton, on June 4, 1994. She was preceded in death by her parents, brothers Warren Norris, Jackie Norris, and John Norris, husband Stephen Pendleton, and stepson Russell Pendleton. Shirley is survived by daughter Allison Rose of Midland, stepdaughters Stacy Sandell Jason of Farmington, New Mexico, and Jennifer Torrigo Gordon of Carlsbad, California. 5 grandchildren and 1 great-grandson. A visitation for Shirley will be held Thursday, August 31st from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. A funeral service will occur Friday, September 1st at 11:30 a.m. at First Methodist Church. Please feel free to wear pink in celebration of Shirley's life. A burial will occur Friday, September 1st at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that a donation be made to Lone Star Animal Sanctuary or Reflections Ministries. K. Conry, July 11, 1957 to August 24, 2023. K. Jean Slater Conry, 66, of Midland, passed away on August 24th. A visitation will begin at 6 p.m. on Thursday, August 31st at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, September 1st at Sovereign Grace Church. Kay was born on July 11, 1957 in Midland to William Parker Slater and Janet Diane Hoffer Slater. She was a graduate of Robert E. Lee High School in the class of 1975 and later attended Midland College. She married the love of her life, Michael Edward Conry, on July 22, 1977. Kay and Mike raised 2 daughters together, Pamela Kay and Melissa Michelle. Kay is survived by her husband, Michael Conry, daughter Pamela Thompson and husband Justin, daughter Melissa Roxburgh and husband Kevin, and most adored grandchildren, Jasmine and Bryson Black. Kay is also survived by her sisters, Trisha Dixon and husband Billy Ed, Diane Slater, Barbara Shirley and husband Tim, Elizabeth Larson and husband Robert, and their families. Kay was preceded in her journey to heaven by her parents, William Slater and Janet Slater. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Recording Library of West Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Bruce Carroll Lendrum, May 25, 1945 to August 25, 2023. Bruce Carroll Lendrum, age 78, of Andrews, passed away on Friday, August 25th, at the age of 78. He is preceded in death by his parents, John Lendrum Jr. and Ruth Lendrum, his wife Celia Lendrum, and his son Robert Eric Lendrum. He is survived by his brother, John Lendrum III, and daughter-in-law, Kelly Lendrum. A visitation for Bruce will be held Thursday, August 31st, from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m., followed by a graveside at 3 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, please donate to https://www.arborday.org in Bruce's honor, or the charity of your choice. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com. Pat Connolly. Pat Connolly, 71, of Midland, passed away August 29th. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, September 1st at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Laura Johnson. Laura Johnson, 67, of Midland, passed away peacefully on August 21st. Viewing will be Friday, September 1st, from 1 to 9 p.m. Funeral service is set for Saturday, September 2nd, at 11 a.m. at Goodwill Baptist Church. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com.
Second annual Ford Asset signing day is Monday. Odessa College announced the second annual Ford Asset signing day at the Sewell Auto Tech facility, 2425 East 8th Street, on August the 28th. Nearly 20 students will celebrate investments toward their educations provided by several Ford dealers across the region. A student and family facility tour will be from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. and the asset signing ceremony from 1 to 2 p.m. The Ford Automotive Student Service Educational Training, or ASSET, program at Odessa College offers an innovative and unique learning model. Students will rotate between classroom studies and hands-on experience at Ford or Lincoln dealerships over 2 years, graduating with an associate degree and valuable dealer expertise. They will earn full certification with Ford, including BEV certifications. Spanning 6 decades, Odessa College and the Sewell family of companies have maintained a long-standing alliance, leading to the formation of the ASSET program, a news release said. Sewell donated the inaugural driver's education vehicle to Odessa College in 1960, the same year OC introduced the automotive technology program. In 2009, the corporation between Team Sewell and OC birthed Drive to Success, an incentive initiative now replicated nationwide. In 2013, the Sewell family donated its original Ford dealership to fuel the program's expansion. In 2019, Sewell Auto Tech became a reality, with plans to enrich our community for many more decades. Since then, Texas Ford dealers have come together amidst the competition for one common goal: fostering future leaders. There are 17 current students enrolled at the time of this publication. Bear Market Underway by Dennis Elam. The flood of consumer savings from COVID is drying up, and so are the retailers who were waiting in it. From the Wall Street Journal, Kohl department store sales declined 5% for the quarter from a year earlier. Macy's reported a surprise loss. Welcome to the end of the bull market, which we recognized as beginning ending November 2021 to January 2022. The first wave down ended October 2022. The corrective wave 2 rebound ended in late July. The next down phase has begun. Consider how the market punished these retailers. In one day, Macy's is down 14%, Nordstrom's down 10%, Dick's Sporting Goods down 24%, yes, in one day, and Foot Locker down 28%. This is how the bear market begins. A month ago, things looked great. Now, not so much. Previously, we identified July 27th as top timing for the rebound. The DJIA has fallen from 35,600 to 34,099. Today, the hot NDX 100 had an outside reversal day, a technical sign meaning a new high and then a new low outside the previous day, signaling lower prices ahead. Our most reliable indicator is the New York Stock Exchange advanced decline line. It peaked, yes, just after July the 27th. It has now turned down. As this is a general interest newspaper, let's just say numerous other indicators have done the same, turned down. Our proxy stock for the market is Cullen Frost CPR Bank. It peaked at 119 July the 27th, rounded, and has already fallen to 95. This is an example of how a firm earning millions of dollars gets thrown into the bear camp. The regional bank index, KRE, has had a wave of one down and two up, now falling from 62 to 44. Silicon Valley and Signature Bank failures were the early warning signs of trouble. The bear market will spread to the rest of the banking sector. The obvious indicator is the short-term interest rates. Jerome and Janet are dreaming if they think they are in charge. This year, that three-month rate has risen from 4.2% to 5.3%, a 26% increase. A 30-year fixed mortgage is 7.31%, the highest since 2000. This, as noted in previous columns, will take more and more of what might have been invested capital as firms roll over older loans and pay higher interest rates. West Texas Intermediate has bounced off its 200-day moving average just under $70. Today, it is $79. Higher prices lie ahead. Unleaded gasoline futures bottomed at $2 and have advanced to $2.58. Higher gasoline prices also lie ahead. Bob Barker, Dapper Price is Right and Truth or Consequences host and animal advocate, dies at 99. It is reported that popular game show host Bob Barker, a household name for half a century as host of Truth or Consequences and The Price is Right, has died at his home in Los Angeles. Barker was 99. Barker, also a longtime animal activist, died Saturday morning, according to a publicist, Roger Neal. I am so proud of the trailblazing work Barker and I did together to expose the cruelty to animals in the entertainment industry, and including working to improve the plight of abused and exploited animals in the United States and internationally, said Nancy Burnett, his longtime friend and caretaker, in a statement. Baker retired in June 2007, telling his studio audience, I thank you, thank you, thank you for inviting me into your home for more than 50 years. Barker was working in radio in 1956 when producer Ralph Edwards invited him to audition as the new host of Truth or Consequences, a game show in which audience members had to do wacky stunts. The consequence, if they failed to answer a question, the truth, which was always the silly punchline to a riddle no one was ever meant to finish, like, what did one eye say to another? The answer, just between us, something smells. In a 1996 interview with the Associated Press, Barker recalled receiving the news that he had been hired. I know exactly where I was. I know exactly how I felt. I hung up the phone and said to my wife, Dorothy Jo, I got it. Barker stayed with Truth or Consequences for 18 years, including several years in a syndicated version. Meanwhile, he began hosting a resurrected version of The Price is Right on CBS in 1972. The original host in the 50s and 60s was Bill Cullen. It would become TV's longest-running game show and the last on a broadcast network of what in TV's early days had numbered dozens. I have grown old in your service, the silver-haired, perennially tanned Barker joked on a primetime television retrospective in the mid-90s. CBS said in a statement that daytime television has lost one of its most iconic stars. We lost a beloved member of the CBS family today with the passing of Bob Barker. During his 35 years as host of The Price is Right, Bob made countless people's dreams come true and everyone feel like a winner. When they were called to come on down, in addition to his legendary 50-year career in broadcasting, Bob will be remembered as a dedicated animal rights activist. In all, he taped more than 5,000 shows in his career. He said he was retiring because, I'm just reaching the age where the constant effort to be there and do the show physically is a lot for me. Better to leave a year too soon than a year too late. Comedian Drew Carey was chosen to replace him. Barker was back with Carey for one show broadcast in April 2009. He was there to promote the publication of his memoir, Priceless Memories, in which he summed up his joy from hosting the show as the opportunity to watch people reveal themselves and to watch the excitement and humor unfold. He well understood the attraction of The Price is Right, in which audience members invited to come on down to the stage competed for prizes by trying to guess their retail value. Everyone can identify with prices, even the President of the United States. Viewers at home become involved because they all have an opinion on the bids, Barker once said. His own appeal was clear. Barker played it straight, warm, gracious, and witty, refusing to mock the game show format or his contestants. I want the contestants to feel as though they're guests in my home, he said in 1996. Perhaps my feeling of respect for them comes across to viewers, and they may be one of the reasons why I've lasted. As a TV personality, Barker retained a touch of the old school. For instance, no wireless microphone for him. Like the mic itself, the mic cord served him well as a prop, flicked and finessed. His career longevity, he said, was the result of being content. I had the opportunity to do this type of show, and I discovered I enjoyed it. People who do something that they thoroughly enjoy, and they start doing it when they're very young, I don't think they ever want to stop. Barker also spent 20 years as host of the Miss USA pageant and the Miss Universe pageant, a longtime animal rights activist who daily urged his viewers to have your pets spayed or neutered, and successfully lobbied to ban fur coats as prizes on The Price is Right. He quit the Miss USA pageant in 1987 to protest over the presentation of fur coats to the winners. Among his activities on behalf of animals was a $250,000 donation to Save the Chimps, the Fort Pierce, Florida-based organization said in an email statement Saturday. Bob Barker's kind spirit lives on at Save the Chimps, where we walk every day on the road named for him after his game-changing contribution, said Save the Chimps CEO Anna Paula Tavares. At the time of the donation, Barker said that he hoped chimpanzees tortured physically and mentally for years when being used for research experiments would find the first peace, contentment, and love they have ever known at Save the Chimps. In 1997, Barker declined to be a presenter at the Daytime Emmy Awards ceremony because he said it snubbed game shows by not airing awards in the category. He called game shows the pillars of daytime TV. He had a memorable cameo appearance on the big screen in 1996, sparring with Adam Sandler in the movie Happy Gilmore. I did The Price is Right for 35 years, and they're asking me how it was to beat up Adam Sandler, Barker later joked. In 1994, the widowed Barker was sued for sexual harassment by Diane Parkinson, a Price is Right model for 18 years. Barker admitted engaging in hanky-panky with Parkinson from 1989 to 91, but said she initiated the relationship. Parkinson dropped the lawsuit in 1995, saying it was hurting her health. Barker became embroiled in a dispute with another former Price is Right model, Holly Hallstrom, who claimed she was fired in 95 because the show's producers believed she was fat. Barker denied the allegations. Neither uproar affected his goodwill from the audience. Born in Darrington, Washington in 1923, Barker spent part of his childhood on the Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota, where his widowed mother had taken a teaching job. The family later moved to Springfield, Missouri, where he attended high school. He served in the Navy in World War II. He married Dorothy Jo Gideon, his high school sweetheart. She died in 1981 after 37 years of marriage. They had no children. Barker was given a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 26th Annual Daytime Emmy Awards in 1999. He closed his acceptance remarks with the sign-off, "Have your pets spayed or neutered." Real or not, massive police response is assured. When 911 calls like the ones at Permian High School this week happen, whether they're real or not, Ector County ISD Police Chief Jeff Daniels wants people to know a massive response is on the way. Nearly every law enforcement agency in the area came out for the August 21st and 22nd incidents. The Texas Rangers are investigating along with ECISD police. These incidents are happening all over Texas and the rest of the nation. Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican from Odessa, also wants to increase penalties for false reports of shootings or bombings at schools. We just want the parents of our students to know this is taken very serious. When we get these calls that come in, it's such a huge, overwhelming response from all law enforcement in our area to ensure our kids are safe, not just ECISD. We partner with everybody. We train with everybody. We do all we can to ensure our kids are safe as possible, and we want them to feel safe, knowing that their children are with us throughout the day and that we're able to protect them, Daniels said. Yesterday, which was Monday, is a prime example of the response we see when our kids are threatened. Our community, we saw yesterday, and they've seen in the past, our law enforcement community response. There's no hesitation. Everybody comes. Everybody helps, Daniels said. When incidents like the ones at PHS occur, it goes out in mass communication across their radio system. All of our radio systems are connected, so it doesn't matter if it's our 911 center, the cities, the sheriff's department, UTBPs. In this case, they're the ones that received it. We're all able to switch over and contact everybody on different channels and let them know what's going on and where to respond, Daniels said. On August the 21st, University of Texas Permian Basin Dispatch received a 911 phone call stating there was an active shooter at Permian High School. UTBP notified all law enforcement agencies in this area and all responded to PHS. Upon receiving the call, ECISD police placed the school in lockdown, an emergency response in which all people inside the school take shelter within a locked room and all campus activities stop. All safety procedures were followed and officers were able to clear the school of any threat, deem it safe, and release the lockdown. Law enforcement confirmed that there was no shooter at Permian and there were no shots fired at the school, which was a claim made by the 911 caller. The afternoon of August 22nd, the Odessa Police Department received a bomb threat for PHS. Multiple law enforcement agencies responded and, with ECISD officers, began searching the school. Officers found two backpacks. However, those were quickly confirmed to have been left by students and were cleared of suspicion. ECISD's Explosive K-9 Officer and OPD's Explosive Ordnance Division also began a preliminary sweep of the campus. Officers also secured the exterior of the campus, and then students and staff were evacuated. At 4 p.m., the school initiated regular dismissal procedures. Some after-school activities resumed in areas of the campus already cleared by authorities during a second campus search. No explosives or suspicious items were found. In the case of ECISD, all the first responders in the area are capable of getting into the schools the same way as an employee, through a scan card. A lot of them carry it in their pocket like we do, Daniels said. For large responses like the ones at PHS, Daniels said they go to a common radio channel. In this case, it was OPD1. We'll notify all responding officers to go to a certain channel, and all officers will operate off that channel, he said. The jurisdiction where the incident happens is who is in charge. So if it's a school, ECISD ran the scene. But it's a coordinated effort inside the command post where we have people from DPS. We have people from the Sheriff's Department, from Odessa Police Department, and from UTPB, Medical Center Police Department. We're all in there to assist in the overall planning, Daniel said. But it boils down to, do we oversee it because it's our property? If it was the sheriff's department, they would have overseen the whole command post. We would have been operating within it, assisting them, but it would be their scene, Daniels said. In every situation, Daniels said, a command post is set up. It depends on what's going on as to where it's set up. On August the 21st, it was in the front parking lot, and then once the building was deemed safe, it was moved inside. Officers doing a visual and physical check of the building is how it was determined to be a hoax. Daniels said he doesn't know how they would prevent hoaxes, as in this case, if it was someone calling in. We do begin an initial validation, trying to confirm it as fast as we can. We have people on scene who are stating what they've heard or what they haven't heard. That's part of the initial validation to end these hoaxes as fast as possible by not only law enforcement, but administrative and staff that are on scene, as well as closed-circuit security camera systems, Daniels said. We have people who jump on and start monitoring it to look for things that could be going on. There's a second level of confirmation we seek to verify we're not seeing anything. We're not seeing what was reported. Then third is the actual physical officer moving through the campus, ensuring that everybody is safe and that what was reported is truly a hoax. So it's kind of a third tier, Daniels said. He noted that officers have been to Permian several times for incidences. Officers are learning where to go, what they're doing, and getting there to help. We're trying to cause the least amount of anxiety and traumatic response to kids that's taking place, Daniels said. We're trying to end that as fast as possible. We communicate very well amongst each other and with administration and out to staff. So there's a lot of moving parts that are going on during these hoaxes to ease the minds of the people who are involved in them. We try to put their minds to rest as fast as we can, to say, hey, it's a hoax. We're here. We're dealing with it. You're safe. But we still go through the process of making sure it's 100% safe before we release it. Whether it was artificial intelligence or an actual person is still under investigation. Daniels said they are working with the Texas Rangers on the probe. Daniels added August 23rd that there was no exact charge yet, and new charges are still being added. If it was a minor that made the calls, Daniels said it depends on the circumstances whether parents will be held responsible. If it's just a minor acting alone, then it's the minor that will be held responsible, Daniels said. Current punishments for false calls are jail time and expulsion from school. We're looking at enhancing this charge. It needs to be as impactful as we can make it. It creates a huge impact on our students and on our staff. The amount of emotional and mental trauma they go through because of these hoaxes really, really hampers our learning process, Daniels said. So if this is what's going to take place, I want to make sure we have punishments to back up the crime that has been committed. Landgraf wants to amend the Texas Penal Code to increase the penalties for false reports of shootings or bomb threats at schools to a third-degree felony, punishable by 2 to 10 years in state prison, and hold the perpetrator liable for any costs incurred by law enforcement responding to the false report. I am prepared to return to the Texas Capitol in October for a special legislative session regarding public education. If this proposal is germane to Governor Greg Abbott's call, I will work to change the law for this school year. If it is not germane to the call, I will file this bill and work to pass it when the legislature convenes for the next regular session in January 2025, Landgraf said in a statement. Talking to students about the penalties that come with making false reports like this will make them aware of the consequences. It's just education there on campus, talking to them about the penalties that come behind things like this. Our kids are good kids, and these aren't typically the ones that are doing this type of hoax stuff. It's just educating them and letting them know the penalties behind it, but also being there. They see the outcome. They see the trauma they go through, so that's an educational process for themselves, Daniels said. Chief Communication Officer Mike Atkins said, from the communication standpoint, When the district receives a message of a lockdown, the first thing they do is call the ECISD Police Department to confirm it. Once confirmed, we begin sending notices, first to the school's parents using text, email, and voice messages. Next, we alert all ECISD staff members of the situation. Then we post messages to district Facebook and Twitter accounts and send to our local reporters. If the situation is one that takes time to resolve, we will send updates every 20 to 30 minutes to these sets of people. Once the situation is over, we send one final message, Atkins said. Last year, a similar incident at PHS occurred where someone did actually have a gun. It happened on the afternoon when several people in the communication loop were out of town, Atkins said. We did not provide the appropriate communication in that situation, and we made changes to our procedures to make sure we do not have that kind of mistake in the future.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.